Radio Prague News.
Czech MPs have passed a special bill acknowledging late ex-president Václav Havel's contribution to freedom and democracy. The Defense Ministry is aiming to try and extend an existing lease on Gripen supersonic fighter jets, the Internet Daily E15 reports. And with the death toll from exposure rising, Prague City Hall is erecting emergency shelters for the city's homeless. Czech MPs have passed a bill acknowledging late ex-president Václav Havel's contribution to freedom and democracy. The simply worded proposal received backing from all parties in the Chamber of Deputies except the Communists. The bill will now head to the Senate. A similar law was issued by the Czechoslovak Parliament in 1930, recognizing the contribution of President Tomáš Garrigue Masaryk to the establishment of independent Czechoslovakia. Prime Minister Petr Nečas reminded MPs that Mr. Havel, a champion of democratic thought, freedom and humanism, contributed to the fall of the communist regime in Czechoslovakia in 1989. Mr. Havel, who continued to support human rights worldwide, died in December at the age of 75. Internet news site E15 has reported that the Czech Defense Ministry is aiming to try and extend an existing lease on Gripen supersonic fighter jets. The successful negotiation of a new deal would mean that a new tender originally planned by the government, mentioned by the Prime Minister Petr Nečas 2 years ago, would not go ahead. According to E15, the negotiation of an extended lease had been recommended in a classified report. As it stands, the current lease will expire in 2015. An anonymous source confirmed that steps were being taken and that the government would be informed about the results of talks in 6 months. The Czech Republic leased 14 of the jets from the Swedish government for 19.6 billion crowns. The original contract was signed in 2004. With the death toll rising from exposure, Prague City Hall has erected emergency shelters for the city's homeless. Three heated tents for some 150 people are being put up in Prague on Wednesday, and the capital's floating boat shelter Hermes will be open during daylight hours, providing tea and soup for free. Arctic conditions have already killed 12 homeless people, and the worst bout of cold weather is still to come. Meteorologists say that nighttime lows at the close of the week could drop to minus 35 degrees Celsius, and according to some forecasts, the freezing cold weather could last until mid-February. There are more than 3,500 homeless people in the Czech capital. In an interview for the Czech daily Pravo, Czech President Václav Klaus has reiterated his opposition to the EU's fiscal union, saying the current proposal, quote, tramples on the sovereignty of individual countries. He pointed to the views of some German politicians who favored Greece handing control of its budget policy to a special EU commissioner as proof. Such a solution, however, has been rejected by the European Commission. In the interview, Mr. Klaus praised Prime Minister Petr Nečas for not agreeing to join the EU fiscal treaty. The Czech Republic was the only EU member that decided not to join the compact on Monday after Britain rejected it last December. The decision not to sign has led to a quarrel between the Prime Minister and country's Foreign Minister Karel Schwarzenberg. Mr. Schwarzenberg has maintained that the Czech refusal to sign on to the EU fiscal treaty will only hurt the country's interests. A female passenger was killed during a car chase in Prague on Wednesday morning. The incident occurred after a police patrol car on Strakonická Street noticed a vehicle that was registered as stolen. Police began pursuit while the driver of the car tried to get away. In doing so, he hit the police car and attempted to run over an officer who had emerged on foot, a spokeswoman for the police force said. The officer reportedly fired on the other vehicle in self-defense. The driver then got several hundred meters away before abandoning the stolen car and disappearing nearby. Police are continuing their search for him. The General Inspection Office of the Security Forces, meanwhile, is investigating the entire incident, including whether the woman in the stolen car was killed by a police bullet. I'm Jan Wellinger, and that's the end of the news.
You're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. I'm Daniela Lazarová. Coming up in today's program, a fierce row has broken out in the Czech Republic over the country's refusal to join the fiscal compact. And we look at what's being done for the homeless in Prague as the freezing cold spell takes a grip on the Czech capital. Later on in Spotlight, Christian Falvey will investigate Prague's bomb shelters and we'll wind up our half-hour show with a Czech lesson as usual. So do please stay with us. Top Czech officials have engaged in an unusually strong exchange of insults over the government's refusal to join the European Union's new fiscal treaty. Foreign Minister Karel Schwarzenberg, Prime Minister Petr Nečas and President Václav Klaus engaged in a crossfire which has put more strain on the fragile coalition government and which illustrates the deep divisions between the major Czech political forces in their stance on European integration. Jan Richter has the details.
The most serious conflict so far between the leaders of the two senior coalition parties broke over an issue which deeply divides them, the future of European integration and the Czech attitude to it. Czech Foreign Minister and leader of the pro-European coalition Topo 9 party Karel Schwarzenberg took serious issue with the Prime Minister's decision to reject the EU's fiscal compact, accusing him of damaging the country's interests. Mr. Schwarzenberg also dismissed the Prime Minister's reasoning, which he said was impossible to take seriously. The cabinet leader's real motivation, according to Mr. Schwarzenberg, was fear of a strong Eurosceptic wing of his party, the Civic Democrats, and their unofficial leader, President Václav Klaus. Mr. Schwarzenberg's remarks put Prime Minister Petr Nečas on the warpath. At a special news conference on Wednesday, the Prime Minister launched an unprecedented tirade against a member of his cabinet.
I consider his remarks exceptionally unfortunate, exceptionally inconsiderate, and exceptionally unprofessional. If he wasn't a man of respected age, I would say they were a sign of a young man's rashness. These remarks were not uttered at some folk festival somewhere. These are very serious issues that can affect the political situation in the country, as well as our international relations.
Prime Minister Petr Nečas also reminded the foreign minister of his role in the government and said he should focus more on his own job.
Czech entrepreneurs have expressed serious complaints and laments about the foreign ministry's inaction. Representatives of Czech industry consider the ministry's activities in this field as very insufficient. I would appreciate if the foreign minister dedicated himself to his ministry, including the crucial task of supporting Czech exports.
Mr. Nečas earned a pat on the back from President Václav Klaus, who considers any further European integration an evil to be fought at all costs, and who believes the planned fiscal union is a tragic mistake. Mr. Schwarzenberg, who is on a four-day trip to Israel, said he would again raise the issue upon his return. He had earlier threatened to quit the government over the fiscal compact, which would most likely bring the center-right Czech cabinet to the brink of collapse.
Jan Richter with that report. A bout of Arctic cold weather is holding the country firmly in its grip, and with temperatures in Prague expected to drop as low as minus 20 degrees in the coming days, the Czech capital's homeless are at high risk. Due to the harsh weather, homeless shelters are already close to operating at full capacity. To help battle deaths from exposure, City Hall officials have arranged for a large heated tent to be put up for those with no roof over their heads. Sarah Borufka has the story.
After a relatively mild start to the winter, the harsh frost and icy temperatures of minus 10 or even minus 20 degrees that have hit the country have caught almost everyone in Prague by surprise. The cold weather is especially hard on the homeless. Shelters are operating almost at full capacity, and many of the city's homeless find themselves without a place to go. The current cold front has already taken its first victim, a 59-year-old homeless woman who was found dead in a deserted area in the capital's Velislavin district on Tuesday. To help battle the cold and increase shelter capacity, the city's Center for Social Services is opening a special tent for the homeless on Prague's Rohanský Island, an area where many of them gather. The tent, which opens Wednesday, will have a capacity of 50. Two other tents with the same capacity will be installed at other locations in the city. In addition, homeless facilities across the city have already extended their opening hours to offer men and women without a home refuge from the cold. Petra Lakatoshova is the director of the Prague branch of Nadeje, a homeless charity.
In response to instructions from Prague city officials, Nadeje and other organizations that assist the homeless have extended the opening hours of their daytime care centers. Since last Thursday, they have been open all night. This way, we were able to quickly increase shelter capacity. Even though the homeless who come to these centers have to lie on the floor or sit on chairs since there are no beds, but they do provide shelter from the cold. All the city's charities are informing each other of their capacity. Last night, all chairs and all beds in the capital's shelters were taken.
Since last October, a total of 11 cold-related deaths occurred in the capital, and many believe that this could have been avoided. Experts and those who work with the homeless have repeatedly criticized the city for being unprepared.
What we need is a guarantee of extra beds in homeless shelters for the winter period so that people can be saved from the consequences of the cold. This should be prepared far ahead of the start of winter, not during the onset of the cold when we are already in a crisis situation.
Outside of Prague, record lows could even reach up to minus 35 degrees, and municipalities across the country are also preparing to battle cold-related deaths.
Sarah Borufka reporting there. A reminder that you're with Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. And now it's time to go places. In this edition of Spotlight, Christian Falvy will take you deep down into Prague's bomb shelters.
Deep beneath the city of Prague is another city altogether, one that most people are completely unaware of, and that they'll hopefully never see. It is a system of hundreds upon hundreds of concrete bunkers, with their own electricity, water, and ventilation systems, awaiting the day that you might hear this sound. The sound of air raid sirens is a normal occurrence in Prague. They are heard all over the city on the first Wednesday of every month at noon when they're tested. The system of bomb shelters is in a similar state of readiness. In the event of a war, there is room beneath the city for 40% of the population. In peacetime, however, the countless kilometers of tunnels are inhabited only by a few dozen workers of the town hall's shelters administration department. Deep beneath Prague, they keep the bunker system in tip-top shape from day to day in the hope it will never be used. Mr. Rostislav Gut is in charge of the department.
In Prague, there are roughly 800 permanent pressurized bunkers. Almost all of them were built in the 1950s, some of them in later years until the metro was built, and then the last was the road tunnel at Strahov. They're classed according to their resistance and how many people they can hold, from a few hundred in shelters under blocks of flats to several thousand, like the Tamovka shelter we're standing in front of now.
The shelter under Vítkov Hill is one of the larger ones. At the end of an alley there is a pedestrian tunnel through the hill, and in the middle of that is an inconspicuous door that leads to a forgotten world. This bunker is a series of extremely long corridors with a long incline, about 3 to 4 meters high and painted white and pastel green, the way communist-era hospitals and prefab stairwells were. If you have ever been inside an old World War II battleship, for example, the atmosphere is similar, with an omnipresent smell of grease, mold, and paint. It's not the kind of place you would want to spend a lot of time in, but then, even if there were a war, you wouldn't have to.
These shelters were made for people to be able to survive here for 72 hours. Of course, everything ultimately depends on the type of attack we would face, but 72 hours was considered enough time for safety measures to be taken on the surface, enough time for them to be able to get to the people inside the shelter if it were buried in debris, and the optimum period in terms of food stores and so on.
Going into the Prague bunkers is a literal descent into history. Key to the general ambience are the technological relics kept in perfect working order. The machinery is almost all from the 1950s, great big objects piped into the walls with huge bakelite knobs and needle gauges. Everything is of massive design, even the ancient telephones hanging from the walls, and of course the ventilation system, the noise of which would probably drive one mad within less than 72 hours.
The ventilation system takes in air from outside through these filters, and it creates overpressure in the shelter. The shelter is then inflated, so to speak, and weaponized gases or toxic substances wouldn't be able to get in thanks to the overpressure created by the ventilation system and the filters.
The hundreds of meters of empty white tunnels, fluorescent lights and grey pipes are ready to become a makeshift home for 1,250 people at any given moment. Everything is meticulously cared for. The staff was particularly pleased that I was unable to record any creaking and thudding sounds off the heavy bulkheads that divide the shelter up, because they're so well oiled. With that kind of readiness, I half expected to see mounds of powdered milk and canned plums, but I came a few decades late for that.
Everything would rot, it would be a waste of money, and there's no sense in it either. If there was a threat of war, everything needed would be brought down for those 72 hours. We have a 48-hour readiness period to prepare the bunkers. In that time, we'd be fitting the air filters, bringing down food stores, beds and bottled water. There are already five wells here, but that's utility water. Originally, those things were here, but they realised it was senseless. There was even canned food. They were storing cans down here that ended up getting thrown away. But that was in the 1950s, when they thought they could be a conflict any day.
But again, sprawling though it may be, the Prague bunker system is only big enough for 40% of the population, roughly less than 500,000 people. Certainly even less than that number, though, is even aware of what all is under their feet. In the event of a war, I thought, few would know where to go, and if they did, there wouldn't be room for them all.
It depends on the so-called running distance. The shelters are designed to hold the population within a 15-minute running distance, and that's established during peacetime. For example, schools know which shelter to take the children to even now in peacetime. Others would have to use improvised shelters. If there were a threat to the country, cellars and underground garages would be fortified. We always check new buildings, new office buildings, for example, to make sure their underground spaces can be converted into shelters with air filters and so on in the event of war. They wouldn't be pressure resistant, but people would be able to wait out an air raid there.
The city's emergency services would rely on notification systems established during the Second World War. Each district has a plan for sending its citizens to the appropriate shelter. Emergency workers would be stationed around the city to help people orient themselves. The bunkers themselves would have to be not only stocked but also cleared out within 24 hours, as many are rented out as storage space. And perhaps even more difficult to imagine, the underground transportation services, the metro and tunnels, would be transformed into a living space for tens of thousands of people.
Strahovski Tunnel is the largest makeshift shelter, and it can shelter 15,000 people if I lead aside the metro. Both have technical and medical facilities running along the sides of the tunnels, and the tunnels then would hold the people. The two ends of the Strahovski tunnel would be sealed. The metro can be closed off every two stations. You can see it when you enter the stations, big, heavy parts of the door that would seal the station off. Or at least I see them because I'm in the business. Everyday citizens probably don't notice them.
In any case, if bombs start falling out of the sky over the Czech Republic, you'll be better off squeezing into a bunker in Prague than anywhere else in the country. While most people in the capital would find shelter somewhere, elsewhere in the country there is only room for 12% of the population of 10 million, small in comparison to other European countries of similar size.
Switzerland has 100% coverage, or the Swedes, they have something like 70% of the population covered. The neutral states are basically the best equipped, even in terms of the number of gas masks. When the East and West were divided, the neutral states in between were the ones who paid the most attention to it.
It's also otherworldly at the end of the day, a city under a city in a peaceful European state, ready to house its people from nuclear Armageddon or other such nastiness. Czechs in gas masks wandering up into a bombed-out Prague after 72 hours in 1950s bunkers. It's almost as scary as the fact that it happened before, over 60 years ago, and the people who work in the bunkers today have little trouble visualizing it happening again.
It can certainly be imagined. These bunkers are made for war, and in time of war they will work, so we can imagine it.
To tady bude fungovat. Tak si to umíme představit.
That edition of Spotlight was presented and prepared by Christian Falvey and was first aired in April of last year. Now we'll wind up today's half hour from Prague with another part in Pavla Horáková's popular language series ABC of Czech, which Radio Prague is currently rerunning.
Hello and welcome to the ABC of Czech, in which we unveil the mysteries of the Czech language. Today's letter is Q for questions. Yes, we're going to try and answer some of the questions and queries which you, the listeners, have sent in. The first one comes from Dustin Lepore from the United States.
Why do you call the Bohemians Czechs? If there's a place called Bohemia, why aren't they called Bohemians?
Well, I guess it's all a matter of the English language and not us here at Radio Prague. First of all, Czechs never call themselves Bohemians. The Czech words are Czech in the singular and Češi in the plural. The word Bohemia comes from Latin. The Romans named the region after a Celtic tribe, the Boii, who used to live there and later moved to what is now France. Through history, other European languages such as French, Italian, Spanish and all Slavonic languages have evolved their own names for both Czechs and their country. And those words sound quite similar to the Czech original. Whereas English adopted the old Latin term for the region, Bohemia, and also called its inhabitants, rather inappropriately, Bohemians. Later, the term Czech came into English and replaced the archaic term Bohemian for both the people and the language. But the word Bohemia was never substituted. So, Dustin, maybe you should put your question to specialists on the English language instead. The second question was sent by my namesake, Paola Paino from Italy. She listened to the episode about Czech names and wanted to know more about the male name Zdeněk. It's quite a common name. For example, the famous 19th century composer Zdeněk Fibich. Linguists differ in opinion on the origin of the name. Some suggest it was derived from the Latin name Sidonius, while others think that it's short for the old Czech name Zdislav. The last question we can fit in this program comes from Michael Starry from the United States.
I'm interested in information about the Summer School of Slavonic Studies for my daughter. Although she is only 2 years old, I hope to accompany her to the Czech Republic during the summers so she can learn the Czech language and culture.
I'm afraid, Michael, your daughter is too young for the summer school, which is usually attended by students over 18. But before she gets older, you'll have plenty of time to look around for a summer school which would best suit your demands. A number of Czech universities, for example in Brno, Olomouc, Plzeň or České Budějovice, organize summer programs for learners of Czech. The one you mention in your email takes place in Prague every year. And if you're interested, Radio Prague has covered it in our program earlier this summer. If you would like to read the text or listen to the program again, just go to our website. And the same applies for all the previous editions of this program, the ABC of Czech. Join us next week if you can. Until then, naschledanou, goodbye.
Pavla Horáková there with her popular language series ABC of Czech, which Radio Prague is currently rerunning. And I'm afraid that's all we have for you today. You'll find us online at radio.cz. Our programs are there in text and sound, and you also find a lot of interesting information about the Czech Republic. Should you like to contact us, then our email address is english@radio.cz, and you can also send a letter snail mail to Vinohradská 12, postal code 12099 Prague, the Czech Republic. We'll be glad to hear from you as always. This is Daniela Lazarová saying thanks for joining us today and goodbye.